so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this is happening.
Yeah, it is. So much is happening.
It's going to be a very interesting toy department this week. We are, we're always remote. But I am on location from my parents' house at 2 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time. Where are you, Matt Kolsky?
I am sitting at my desk at 11:05 p.m. West Coast time, which is interesting that there's also it's a 3 hour and 5 minute difference, and not just or a 2 hour and 55 minute difference, rather, I guess.
Who would have thought of that?
Yeah, or one of us is more interested in accuracy than the other. Hard to say which of those two things just happened. I don't plan to be interested in accuracy much longer. If that's any consolation, because I figured since you, it's 2 a.m. and you just woke up from a nap, that the best way I can, even the playing field is to avail myself of California's brand spanking new legal recreational marijuana laws and, aggressively take bong rips throughout this podcast recording.
All right, I like that. All right, so government in action.
Thanks, America.
So marijuana. So the I don't know what the prop was. Was it like 64 or whatever?
64. Yeah, Prop 64.
So the law passes, and then the law is instituted the very next day. Is that
how
it works?
There's a lot of logistics still to happen, as I believe you know. But as I understand it, Proposition 64 does immediately become active, as it were. Now, they have to figure out how to legally sell marijuana. There's a lot of regulation to be done for the sales market. However, as of the day after the election, I'm going to go straight to the source of, let's see, the San Jose Mercury News here in the Bay Area, which says although you cannot legally purchase weed as a consumer of non-medical variety, you can immediately possess and or consume marijuana. And technically speaking, the ways you can get it are either you can grow your own marijuana, but obviously the turnaround on that is a little slow, so you could not have legally grown it and had it ready to smoke on November 9th. You can, however, give and receive up to an ounce of marijuana as gifts. So as long as you legally acquired your marijuana, you are allowed to possess up to an ounce or up to 6 plants and, smoke them if you got them.
Gotcha. And there's no one who isn't going to say, well, I just got gifted this when push comes to shove, right?
Well,
it's going to be a suddenly more generous California.
Yeah. Well, look, California is a very generous place where we give and receive with pleasure. That got weird. But it's true. But it's also true.
I think this is officially going to be the weird episode of the toy department. So how much sense can we expect you to make within the first 15 to 20 minutes of this episode?
Well, I see no reason not to immediately start finding out.
Okay. All right. Well, I do have a beer that I'm going to be slowly sipping during this podcast, but now I feel super lame. Lame by comparison.
If it makes you feel any better, I thought, oh, whew. I thought it would be fun to have a beer as well, and I'm out. So I only have this. Let's see. It's a Blue Dream strain, and it is particularly strong, over 26% THC quantity.
That seems like a lot.
I have not seen higher, so I figured if I'm going to do this, do it right.
All right. Although, one of those things.
I'm going to say, I'll say right now, because I don't really know. Because, you know, you have a vague idea of how you behave when you're intoxicated to various degrees. But I think it's like even odds right now between people being surprised and or disturbed by how, like, high I get throughout the podcast, or people being surprised and disturbed by just how much marijuana gets consumed without me noticeably being high on the podcast. So let's find out.
I do have a feeling that if not for the bubbles and coughing, that no one would notice.
It's possible.
That's what it's going to be like.
It's possible.
On the show today. All right, so this is the very loose Thanksgiving edition of the toy department. And can I just say...
It's
sorry, go ahead.
Like, I'm basically on vacation right now.
Yes. Yeah. I'm literally doing this from my parents' house. So
yeah, you are literally on vacation.
Yeah, I'm quite literally on vacation.
I do work on Friday, so I'm only kind of on vacation.
Yeah, that's a bummer. So you were doing this post Warriors game, correct? Did the Warriors drop 150 points tonight? Did I see that correct?
But they fell just short, unfortunately. So not a great performance, but 147? No, 149 was the final. So a point short. But when the other team has 106, you feel pretty good about 149. And the thing I was doing at the Warriors game tonight is really it's probably my best gig. It's a side gig where my friend and coworker Bob Fitzgerald is who does play-by-play on TV for the Warriors is kind enough to give me the hookup for a gig doing stats for him, which basically amounts to like keeping basic score and keeping some track of like runs and stuff like that. It's very easy work that I get paid for in addition to getting to sit at the scorer's table for Warriors basketball. So it's like getting paid twice or even five times. And there are some things. I mean, okay. So first of all, 149 was actually not the best case scenario tonight. And I know maybe that seems silly when you're like, oh, well, the team shot 61.5% from the field and over 50 from three-point range. But, like, let's just say open shots were missed. It could have been even worse. I would say they cruised to 149. None of the starters were played in the fourth quarter at all, if I remember correctly. No one played more than 30 minutes in this game for the Warriors. It was spectacular. And from the beginning of the season, I don't want to get too basketball wonky, but much like 2 years ago, the year they actually won the championship, which was Steve Kerr's first year, the problems offensively have been overpassing and not quite being in exactly the place where people expect them to, which is kind of what you expect from either new players or a new system. In this case, it's mostly new players, but the system is new to them, obviously. And the defensive problems are largely about communication and teamwork, not because guys aren't trying, but again, it's lack of familiarity. And so as the Warriors have, you know, I think by some expectations, struggled to a 13-2 start, there have been these communication and I don't want to say teamwork problems, because they're not failing to work as a team. They're just not used to it. But you do see these stretches. And this was one of the first games where you saw what the Warriors can be pretty much from the opening buzzer to the final buzzer. And it's terrifying, because the Lakers were down a couple players and are not a great team, but the degree to which they were run off the floor tonight was remarkable by any standard, no matter who you're playing against. And when the Warriors get the ball hopping around and start to get aggressive on defense, this may not seem like a huge revelation, but I think we're watching the best team of all time in the making. Now, there's a question of whether you can reach the level of the potential that this game shows at a consistent rate. But if they can be this team 80% of the time, we've never seen anything like it. We truly have not. It's uncanny. You can't believe how many good players are on the floor.
Yeah, there, it seems like there are a lot of them. I have a lot of questions because it seems like, I've seen a number of Warriors games. I've actually seen a number of Warriors losses this season. I think they may be under 500 in the games I've watched, which is sort of remarkable because they've lost one loss three times.
Twice.
Twice? Yeah, okay. They're probably over 500. I've watched a few more than that.
But still.
The thing that jumps out at you is, the team has a problem with interior defense a little bit. Toughness and rebounding, and it's the kind of thing that at least makes me worry.
I wouldn't say toughness.
In a playoff sense. Yeah, I mean, okay, toughness is maybe the wrong word. But they can certainly get pushed around inside, and you feel like there's a bit of a lack of rim protection at times. And it's the kind of thing that you think, well, the playoffs against the right team, when the game slows down, they can be vulnerable. Do you still feel like that could be a potential issue for this team, even with all this talent on the floor, that maybe in the playoffs they're not just going to be able to outscore everyone at will?
I honestly don't know that it will be a problem if you're talking about can they win a title this year, because I do think they may just be that good. And again, even as they've been by far the best offensive team in basketball, I don't think we've seen this was really the first game where most of the time things looked like they were moving and the ball was hopping around and the turnover number was low, I believe. Yeah, 10 turnovers on the night. And again, I mean, JaVale McGee had two turnovers. Nobody else had more than one. And he only played 10 minutes. So, that you can almost throw a couple of those out, even, in terms of, actually the way the game looked. And the way, I mean, Curry, Thompson, and Durant were a combined 31 for 47.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, look, they're going to have some nights when they just shoot people out of the gym.
Well, but this is what I'm saying. I think they're still far from a general groove, even with a 9-game win streak, even with this offensive explosion. I think they're still far from a long-term groove that they can get to, which is to say, I don't think it's insane to suggest that this team, if it really got it rolling, could score 200 points in a regulation basketball game. I know that seems ridiculous, but I really believe it's possible. And because of that, I'm not sure that problem, which you mentioned, that is real. I'm not sure that's enough to stop them from winning a title if they really get going. That being said, if you want to talk about them as the best team of all time, I think that's a hole. That's a hole that you need to fill. And I think there's a few ways you can hope to fill it. If you're talking about just in the playoffs, I think there will be matchups where you will see David West get a lot of time in the postseason if things don't change a bit.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's not great.
David West is not good right now.
Well,
David West.
He's a professional defender. So you're right. He's not. I mean, he's old. But if he gets in shape over the course of the season playing 10 or 15 minutes a game, can he give you 25 good ones in a playoff series? I think it's possible. Like I said, these are possibilities. The second possibility, which would be my personal preference, is that JaVale McGee, through osmosis and experience, tones down the crazy a little bit and finds a way to give you 15 to 20 good minutes a night in a postseason environment. I don't think that's particularly likely, but I would love it. I love the dude. He had a dunk tonight that you will see on the top 10 where Patrick McCaw, their rookie wing, threw an alley-oop entirely too high, far, and hard. And JaVale McGee jumped to a height I have not seen, reached his arm about 3 feet behind his own head to catch it one-handed, and threw it down all in one motion, and it is one of the most incredible alley-oops I've ever seen in my life. That being said, he's completely insane. He turned it over twice for no reason, and he does really goofy things at times. So that's not great. I think the third option is going to be buyout players, because they really can't they don't have much to trade. They're pretty locked in with what they've got. So there will be guys who get bought out and want to sign for the veteran minimum with a contender. It's unclear who that will be, though, and that's a tough thing to count on. And then here's the number four, which I think is what the Warriors are hoping for, and I wouldn't say expecting but or counting on, but they feel good about, and that is the rookie, Damian Jones, who is a seven-footer out of Vanderbilt, who is sort of has been described to me and scouted as perhaps maybe a slightly more polished, slightly more offensively polished Festus Ezeli type of guy. Good athlete, right. Big, mostly there. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Mostly there to play to play defense and rebound, but also this guy apparently has a bit of an offensive game as well. But that would just be a bonus. The Warriors just need a guy to play D and rebound. Because they got, you know, Pachulia or even Anderson Varejão can, like, meaninglessly wave at people defensively and then be a nice rotational part of the offense. Maybe not Varejão, but certainly Pachulia can move the ball on offense, can hit a jumper, will hit his free throws. But he's a liability defensively. And you have to answer the question, ultimately, do you need to fill that hole, or can you do it with offense and a swarming small ball defense, and you just try to outmatch up people with Draymond Green and Kevin Durant in your front court? And I'll say this, if a lineup with exactly, you know, Draymond Green at center and Harrison Barnes at power forward was the best lineup in the league when it was on the floor, you can't convince me that the one with Durant won't be that much better, and also that much better defensively against bigs, because Durant really can protect the rim a bit.
Yes, yeah, he can. I just, you know, we can talk about probabilities and possibilities, and you know, the Warriors kind of have them exactly as you laid out. They're, you know, there's hope that they will improve in that area in some way. But you know, it's a virtual certainty that to win a title, they're going to have to go through some combination of the Cavs, Spurs, and Clippers, right?
Yep.
So, you know, and those are teams with
let's start with the
guys
Clippers.
Who can hurt you, particularly from a rebounding, offensive rebounding standpoint.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're going to lose the rebounding battle probably. The question is, can Draymond Green and Kevin Durant work hard enough and be smart enough on the glass against DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin to keep it reasonable?
Yeah.
You know, I tend to think they can. And more importantly, you know, one thing people get wrong, I think, is calling the Warriors a small team. Because really, they're just a team without a center. They're very long and big at almost every position except center.
Yeah, so they're a perimeter team more than they are a small team.
Yeah, but also Draymond Green gets into it in the paint. Kevin Durant can get inside and do things offensively and defensively. In fact, I mean, that's the other thing, is like watching Kevin Durant be chill and just participate in an offense and then just do things all of a sudden, I still haven't gotten used to it. because you forget. You're so used to watching this Warriors team. They're playing basically the same way. And at times, Kevin Durant is doing what Harrison Barnes did. And when that's happening, you kind of forget he's Kevin Durant. And then all of a sudden, a Kevin Durant thing happens, and it's like, oh my God, this team. It really... I'm actually surprised at how dramatic the effect of Durant's presence is just on simply watching the game.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions now, because we've gotten deep dive and wonky into the Warriors.
Unfortunately, you went to like the place where I was most likely to pontificate, and then I took several bong rips and pontificated extraordinarily.
Yes, and then the pontification began. Yeah. Okay, so all right, so two questions.
Okay.
I'll start with the first one. Is there some sort of prize for the fans at Oracle Arena when the Warriors score 100 still? Because that seems like maybe they need to move that bar.
That's a great question. I mean, I was working, so I did not have a ticket in hand, and I don't have a great – the one thing I don't have a great vantage point of is the Jumbotron, so I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, look, so you used to be able to get two free tacos from Jack in the Box.
Yeah.
And people would go nuts anytime they got around 100.
Whatever the number is.
So I feel like you would know.
No. Because they broke 100 in the third quarter.
Right, yes. That's correct.
It was 80-49 after at halftime, rather. They had 80 points at halftime. So, like, towards the end of the third when they break 100, I don't think anyone's even paying attention to that sort of thing yet. But also, I've got like a headset on. Like I could have missed it if they did pay attention. And even if it's 120, people are going to get a lot of tacos this year.
It's true. That's what I mean. I feel like it's like pretty much a guaranteed taco every time out at 100.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty true. That's pretty true.
Maybe that should be the slogan of the ticket campaign. I don't know what the kids' marketing slogan is.
I don't know.
But a taco every time out, I think.
I don't know how well that's going to go over for whoever's providing said tacos.
All right. And my other question, semi-serious.
All right.
This is two consecutive years that I have watched them get destroyed by the Lakers at Staples Center. How does that happen?
I mean, I think you know how that happens.
You say LA nightlife the night before? Is that the deal?
I didn't say anything.
One year it was like the terrible Kobe Bryant-less Lakers. I went to the game. I was so excited to see the Warriors in person just destroy the Lakers and went the other way around.
Let me say this. I do think it's interesting that those two losses happened to come in the city of Los Angeles, but I certainly would not want to cast any aspersions upon anyone.
All right. I mean, it's not like they go to Miami, every year and get killed, right?
Because really, so. Who am I at this point to suggest that anyone should not avail themselves of all that Los Angeles has to offer?
Okay, that is a fair point.
I don't know. Look, I think that's possible. I think maybe you take them a little lightly. I think also, again, Luke Walton has this team playing really well, and tonight, in their defense, they did not have arguably their two best players in Julius Randle, and, I mean, he's probably not, but D'Angelo Russell. So,
yeah.
That's a depleted team. You know? It's not... They were a better team that beat the Warriors in Los Angeles, I guess is all I'm saying. And not a bad team. A team that coming into tonight was 8-7, you know, and has a lot of interesting young talent and in their own right is scoring 110 points a game.
It's true. It still baffles me how Laker fans can't look at the 2016-17 version of this team and not just be mad at Kobe for stalling things out for 2 years, but they're not quite the opposite.
It's really hard. It's hard for me to identify with as well. But I never, Michael Jordan did that for another team. So like to a degree, I don't want to judge because like, I can't even really imagine how it would have felt to have Jordan. Because that's who Kobe is to them, you know? I mean, he might as well be Jordan to them.
Right.
I can't imagine. I have to tell you, I might have tolerated a Michael Jordan farewell tour.
Maybe, but I would say, you know, you can't really say Kobe might as well be Jordan to them.
Why not?
Because
five
because
titles?
Jordan, yeah, no, he's. I'm not taking nothing away from Kobe, but I would say the difference is that, like, Jordan is such a singular player within the history of the Chicago Bulls.
Okay, but Kobe is a consensus Kobe, top 10 player of all time, isn't he?
Yeah, but sure, consensus top 10 player of all time, but he's not the consensus number one Laker. He's not the consensus number two Laker. He might not be the consensus number three Laker.
Oh, stop. So, he's got to be consensus top three Lakers. Who's okay, Magic is number one, obviously, but who else do you put ahead of Kobe?
Well, look, I'm saying you could put Kareem ahead of Kobe.
I guess, but I don't think I don't think the love is there for Kareem in the same way.
A lot of people do, and you could put Wilt ahead of Kobe.
Oh. Well, yeah. I don't think of Wilt as a Laker per se, though.
You know, Wilt's I wouldn't, Wilt. But you could also make a case to put Jerry West ahead of Kobe.
Yeah, some people might be inclined to do that. All right, no, I see your point. Yeah. But nevertheless, it's five titles and a guy who's a consensus top 10 player of all time. I'm just saying, as someone who grew up with Michael Jordan, although I feel the same emotions you do about the absurd Kobeism from Laker fans, I hesitate to judge, because if I think about watching
Jordan... It
wasn't
like it was just 1 year that he held that team.
No, I know.
It was at least two.
I know. But again, after living with Jordan for a decade, I don't know that I would have begrudged him that. I'm not sure it would have been enough to turn me on Jordan, man. That's what I'm saying to you.
Well,
I kind of get it, although my knee-jerk gut reaction is the same as yours.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you have to hate Kobe if you're a Laker, man. I'm just saying, like, Kate, you could be a little pissed, right?
Well, on the other hand, those teams got you D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram. I don't see it with Brandon Ingram, although today it was his first start and arguably his best game as a pro. I don't – to me, he's got the body of Kevin Durant, but he doesn't move. Like, he'll never be that to me. I think his upside is more like Al-Farouq Aminu or something. But I've been wrong before.
This is total tangent, but we are moving to the point where, you know, it used to be like, well, you know, God, I think a team of just John Calipari players could win the NBA title. We're now getting to the point where I feel like a team of John Calipari players could just be separated up into two. And that both of those teams could be in the finals.
Well,
like, there are so many Kentucky dudes in the lead right now. It's crazy.
Ingram's Coach K. There is Julius Randle. Well, let's. Do we want to try?
Sure. Well, I mean, think about it.
I know you
just
could build. You could build one good team. I don't think it would win. I don't think it'd beat the Warriors, though.
All right. So a team with a front line of
Cat and Davis.
Yeah, Cat and Davis.
Yeah,
I mean, I think you start right there, and that team's, you know,
that's nasty.
Got a pretty good shot to win.
Okay, but then who else you got
in the backcourt? You're gonna go what? You're gonna go John Wall.
You're not
at point guard.
Yeah,
and then let's see. Now I gotta start looking stuff up. Hold on.
Well, I mean, there's, I see, I don't know. I think after that, I mean, there's
definitely more dudes, hold on.
There's guys like Patrick Patterson, Marcus Teague didn't really make it in the league. There's a couple of wings that I'm not pulling right now. DeAndre Liggins, was he at Calipari?
Yeah, let's see. You got Devin Booker.
Devin Booker.
That's a good...
Oh, crap. Oh, I forgot about him.
Gosh,
this team is really good.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of dudes. Hold on. And then, by the way, that's only kind of the Kentucky players. We're not even counting the players that he coached in Memphis, right?
So, well, what do you want? You want Derrick Rose and fucking what's his name? Joey
Joey? All right, so you've got
what's that dude? Who am I thinking of?
I don't know, who are you thinking of? Oh, Joey. Good old Joey.
Joey Dorsey? Is that someone?
All right, so you got
Joey
got
Dorsey. That was real. I was right. Okay.
Joey Dorsey. That was a real guy. You got Eric Dorsey. You got Brandon Knight. Let's see. Let's see.
I just
Jody
learned
Meeks.
Something very weird.
Rondo. I forgot about Rondo.
Oh, crap, Rondo. He's good, too. Okay, man, would that be a fun... None of those guys are on the Warriors, either.
Yeah. No,
oh, this should be the All-Star game.
Seriously, the All-Star Kentucky game versus the Warriors?
Yes. The All-Star, we just had the best idea.
Yeah. No, we had the best idea. That's clearly what happened.
Thank
we
you.
Said the best idea.
I'll take a bow for that.
You throw in your Randles, your Noels, your Patrick Pattersons, Kate Gilchrist. Like, it's pretty. It's.
That is.
Or Colley Stein. You know, that team's going to have some depth.
That's uncanny.
Yeah. That's pretty
crazy. Yeah. And, when Boogie, Cat, and Anthony Davis?
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah.
You could
scary.
Play all those three guys at once, by the way.
Uh-huh. Let me tell you, that's a team that can switch everything too, I think.
Moses. All right. Now I'm having really exciting daydreams about the Kentucky All-Stars against the Warriors. God, that game would be polar opposites. It would be such an incredible... I could probably arrange this on a video game.
You could arrange it on a video game.
That's probably the thing to do.
Pay-per-view. Yeah.
Yeah. I would pay-per-view the hell out of that. Do you know how much money they could make on that? Damn.
So much money.
Who can we talk to? I'm going to talk to Bob Fitzgerald. We'll see what he says.
Because you know the Kentucky guys would want to do it, right? All of them.
Probably. It would kind of be a terrible look for every other NBA team besides the Warriors, no matter what happened. But I'm okay with that.
Yeah. All right. So it is Thanksgiving.
Whew. That was a major basketball detour. I am refreshed.
Yeah. And I have to say, this is my semi-rant for the day.
Don't hate on Thanksgiving. Don't be that guy.
No, it's quite the opposite.
Oh, thank God.
I love Thanksgiving.
Because it's the best, because you're a reasonable adult, and it's the best holiday.
It is the best holiday. You know, you have all this great food, you have family, you have football. You know, it's not going to be freezing cold outside. Like, it's the great time of year. And just the idea of actually taking a moment in your life to appreciate the things that make it great. What a concept for a holiday, right? It's perfect.
Okay, so everything you just said is true, and my thoughts are almost identical, but I'm going to break it down for you in four simple steps, if I can remember what they are now. The first one is, as you just said, non-denominational and really nice message. Just a nice, even though it kind of celebrates a nasty genocide, the message of giving thanks and embracing your family and friends and sharing love is beautiful. And you know, and it's not
it,
it's not
holiday doesn't really celebrate a nasty genocide when it comes down to it, right?
Agreed. And this one is like, not that the genocide's any less offensive than others, but this one's it's nice that it's non-specific. You don't have to give thanks. You don't have to be Christian or a particular religion or color or whatever. You can be whoever you want. Everybody gets to give thanks. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, double day off. You get for this holiday a 4-day weekend, which is longer than the week. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Holiday gives you that. Even holidays that last many, many days don't give you multiple days off. Genius.
Yeah,
okay.
Every single year, right? Sometimes Sometimes you get a holiday that'll be like one time out, and you know, falls on a Thursday, and you get that double day, and you think it's amazing. But Thanksgiving,
but
every
not with
year.
Consistency. Yes. So that's number two. Number three, the food. And look, I am sort of a standard Thanksgiving food guy. I don't often eat turkey, but on this day, I love me some turkey and stuffing and gravy and all that good stuff. But I'm not opposed. Like, multiple people have told me in the last 48 hours that lasagna is a critical and perhaps favorite part of their regular Thanksgiving spread every year. And you know what?
Were these people high?
No. One was Italian, though, if that's any consolation.
I mean, look, I'm not against lasagna at Thanksgiving. That sounds delightful.
Well, listen, here's the point. All I'm saying is this is a holiday where, A, you have a delightful cornucopia, specific use intended, of different foods and drinks and all that stuff that are traditional, but also it's really just a license to eat as much of whatever you want as you possibly can, because then step four, you get to sit on a couch and watch football all day.
Yep.
Tell me, with those four tenets of Thanksgiving, how any holiday could possibly best it. It could not.
I can't. And so this is my problem, is that we just did a solid couple minutes there breaking out how amazing Thanksgiving is.
Yeah.
You're not really going to do that for any other holiday, and yet somehow Thanksgiving is getting the short shift, I feel like.
Because people like presents. Because Americans want presents. It's all about presents, you know?
Like, there are people with Christmas lights already up in this neighborhood.
Uncool,
Starbucks
bro.
Is already selling Christmas cups.
Well, like, technically they're just red cups, actually.
Not red, sorry. I don't want to get into that political detour.
They're just, you know, red holiday cups, actually, technically. Yeah, no, like, you're right. It's offensive.
There needs to be no talk of Christmas.
None.
Until we get through Thanksgiving.
Now to
Christmas your heart out starting Friday.
Now to be fair, I believe between the two of us we have a Jew and a half. So
yes.
We may be marginally biased against Christmas. one of the reasons I know there's not a war on Christmas is because, like, I at least would have been recruited. I'm not saying I would have joined, but I'd know because someone would have talked to me about that shit, because I've said enough to attract attention from the anti-Christmas crowd, is all I'm saying. Right.
What I'm saying. There clearly is a war on Thanksgiving, and yet we can't talk about it.
Yeah, you're right, because God forbid.
I will join the front line of the war on Thanksgiving. Like, I'm ready to throw down for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes. No, to the death I will defend Thanksgiving.
All right.
Don't hold me to that. I've had a lot of drugs.
So, this year, I have to say, if Thanksgiving wasn't already great enough, we actually have an entire day of solid football games.
Yeah. Three game day.
So, you know, there's usually you get three games. And I'm sure one will be a blowout like it usually isn't. But you kind of need that because at some point you actually have to eat and talk to your family.
Do you, though? I don't, because I'm going to a Friendsgiving. We're going to eat and watch football.
There you go. All right. Well, I mean, potentially six playoff teams today. Probably won't work out that way, but at least you got six playoff contenders going at it.
Yeah, I think you can viably say there's certainly six playoff contenders, right?
Yeah, six playoff contenders. Because look, they, you
and
know, the
games that
the Vikings,
you know,
and the Lions are battling for the same spot, most likely.
Uh-huh.
But they are battling for that spot.
Well, but to your point, also games that are meaningful in that battle.
Yeah, exactly. Skins and the Redskins. There you go. Cowboys and the Redskins. Same deal. Sorry for saying Redskins three times. And then you've got the Steelers and the Colts, who both of whom could win their divisions. So I'm real fired up for this. You'll probably have already seen these games by the time you hear this, but
yeah. But it is the best. It is the best Thanksgiving slate in a while. It seems like.
Yeah, it's gonna be a hell of a day. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, what's your favorite Thanksgiving food item? Before we move on.
Oh. God, I love so many of them so
much. Me too.
You know what? This could be a controversial choice. Wow. But you know what I really just delight in?
What's that?
I like stuffing.
Yeah,
I like stuffing a lot.
Yeah, me too. That's good. That's mine. Because I love many things, but ultimately, like if okay, here's the situation I'm setting up for you. You go to a Thanksgiving dinner. Everything about it is excellent, except one thing goes wrong. The thing that could go wrong that would ruin my night the most is the stuffing. That's how I'm deciding that stuffing is my favorite Thanksgiving food.
Interesting. Interesting.
Because, yeah. Like, listen, if the turkey goes wrong, I'll survive, man. I got mashed potatoes, I got Brussels sprouts and bacon, I got sweet potato pie and casserole with marshmallows on top. I got all sorts of good stuff.
You're right.
But somehow if the stuffing is no good, like, it's the stuffing is the glue that holds the Thanksgiving dinner together, man. That's what
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say that. And, yeah. You know, you get a little bit of turkey vibe.
Uh-huh.
You get yourself some starch. It's that bready, flavorful thing.
Yep.
You know, it's cooked in the turkey's butt, which is just fantastic.
That's hot.
It's,
gravy everywhere, you know. It's just, it's the best, yeah.
It just says Thanksgiving to me. You
true,
know what I mean?
True story.
Stuffing.
I'm so glad that we're so aligned on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, who knew? All right, Thanksgiving. Fired up about it. We should probably get into San Junipero, right? We've been talking about it for a while now.
We talked about talking about San Junipero. We also actually, I think before we get there, and you know, let's give a way advanced spoiler alert because we will spoil it when we do get there. But can we squeeze in a little bit of Tribe? Because I don't know that we have too much to say about it at this point.
Yeah, sure.
Most of what I think we would say has been said to some degree, a lot. But the new A Tribe Called Quest album, which, you know, Fife passed away a few months ago now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So we know almost all of his stuff was verses that had been pre-recorded, but then Q-Tip made a point apparently of going into the studio and making sure everyone else who did it came in and did it live so that it just is really excellent. And it feels like a Tribe album. It feels like group hip-hop MCs actually engaged with one another on the same track. The production is tremendous. You know, I think Q-Tip probably gets a lot of credit for that, but I want to give a shout to Ali Shaheed Muhammad, who just I don't think gets enough respect in general, because that dude is a big part of making the beats that made A Tribe Called Quest, which are just, it's tremendous. And
yeah, I mean, the sound, the record just sounds so distinctively Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah,
you know what
yet,
I mean?
And like, it also sounds like a record that came out in 2016, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was so well done, particularly production-wise, but also, I mean, I don't know that I forgot, but it's nice to be forcibly reminded that, A, Q-Tip, I mean, both of them, these are two of the most talented and unique lyricists and rappers in the history of the art form.
Yep.
And it's tremendous to listen to. And the best use of Busta Rhymes, the best possible use of Busta Rhymes is as a guest on A Tribe Called Quest song.
I don't even think it's in dispute.
No,
right?
that's definitely true.
That is his best self, certainly. And
well, one time for Busta Rhymes, everybody.
I mean, it is amazing, like, when you eat, like, just the... They hadn't lost the step factor of this whole thing.
Yeah.
You know? That these guys who, you know, not that they haven't been around, you know what I mean? But it's been a while since there's been a Tribe record for sure. And yet they step in and it's every bit as good and as vital as stuff they were doing 20 years ago. It, you know, it struck me.
Well,
did you watch the Saturday Live performance?
I did.
And
honestly, it's just heartbreaking that they didn't get it together sooner, frankly.
Yeah. When you, it's striking to me when you watch that performance, you know, that they look they look like old guys cashing in on a reunion a little bit. You know what I mean?
Jarobi, by the way, pretty good rapper. Probably should have got a little more run back in the day.
Yeah, for sure. but if you close your eyes, you know, those guys could be 22 years old up there.
Yeah, like, no question.
It's a time warp, you know, and then just seeing them actually do it makes you realize the kind of jump in space and time that's actually happening there. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I have not finished playing and replaying it. It is excellent. It's just it's an excellent album of music. It really is. And by the way, speaking for a group that had it had been, you know, 15 or 20 years, whatever it was, since they released an album, it spoke to the current political climate, spoke to social issues, is aggressively relevant as well as good.
Yeah. But do you think would we have liked it as much if they were making records that whole time?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you answer that. The work would have been different if they'd been making records the whole time. But, well, I don't know. I don't think making records the whole time was possible. I mean, I think there always is that you do sometimes need a break in a musical group of any kind. I hate to go to my obvious touchstone, but like Fish, the band Fish was bad when it broke up. And without breaking up and people going through various things, who knows what would have happened. It probably would not have been very good. Someone may have died ultimately. But, you know, with Tribe, it was more people getting fed up to a point where they couldn't work together. But you're talking about guys who had been kids together and then grown up, tied inextricably to one another, and then trying to sort of stretch in different creative directions and fighting, basically. And I think just being sick of each other. But to me, it seems like a brothers fighting sort of thing. And it does seem a shame that they didn't... Obviously, they did come to some sort of arrangement, conclusion, resolution of starting to make this album. You wish they could have at least finished it with Fife alive and toured it once, you know? Or maybe if it had happened 5 years earlier, maybe there'd be three more Tribe albums of great quality. Yeah. Who's to say? I certainly do think, he's a savvy enough guy that I expect this to happen, that I would expect that this will be a launching, or at least an attempted launching point for a Q-Tip renaissance, because obviously as a production, his production is tremendous. And when you look back at all the other stuff he produced that you don't think about, which I can't pull any of right now, perhaps because I've had 6 to 7 hits of marijuana from this water pipe. But I wonder if Wikipedia has a list of things he produced.
I'm working on it. Keep making your point.
I mean, it's some of the most groundbreaking music in the hip-hop world was produced by Q-Tip. He has a track on Illmatic. He has, you know, he's part of the UMMA, which is like JD, where JD launched. The list of artists he has been involved with producing per Wikipedia: Fife, Beyonce, Mary J. Blige, Jay-Z, The RZA, Wale, Asher Roth, Esperanza Spalding, who, by the way, is incredible. If you know, that's an album we should listen to. It's another weird lady singer that I would like to torture you with. Pusha T, Melanie Fiona, Mark Ronson, Busta Rhymes, D'Angelo, Questlove, Kanye, John Legend, and Rock Marciano. And that's just...
Did you say Whitney Houston? Because Whitney Houston's a mentor.
Yeah, I did not. That's earlier.
And Mariah Carey.
Mariah Carey. Mobb Deep. I mean...
Cypress Hill.
Yeah. But it's pretty unbelievable. And In fact, he already has announced a 2017 album called The Last Zulu.
All right. Apparently. Well, I'm in. I welcome the Q-tipissance.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I was always in on Q-Tip, and he didn't. He hasn't put out an album since 2009. Yeah. You know, so I guess he released a mixtape with Busta Rhymes, I'm seeing now, in 2013, which I had no idea existed, but now I might try to find and download. So yeah, why couldn't? I mean, look, who knows? People's lives are complicated. Who am I to judge? But do I wish they had found their resolution in 2012? Yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah, because look, fans need breaks, or groups need breaks, I think is a fair point. But they don't necessarily need to hiatus or break up. You know what I mean? Like, there are many successful bands who started out together as kids.
Yeah.
And didn't break up.
No, of course not.
Had very long, fruitful runs. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Of course not all do. I'm just saying some do. Yeah. I'm saying it can be a natural thing. But for them, you know, again, the last Tribe album was what, like 99?
It's been a while.
Yeah, I think because the Love Movement, I think, was their last real studio release before this one.
Yeah. Now, I think we are of the same mind in terms of the best album in the Tribe catalog, right? Everyone should be of the same mind that it's clearly Low End Theory, you know?
I do feel like that. And Love Movement was the last album. Here's like a slightly longer answer to the question of what is the best Tribe album. To me, there are three levels of Tribe album, and I would say that even including the newest. It is Low End Theory, then it's all the other ones except the Love Movement, and then it's the Love Movement.
Right.
And the Love Movement's not bad. It's just not great.
Yeah,
because all of these albums are great. People's Instinctive Travels is one of the. I mean, it's super cheesy backpack rap stuff, but it's delightful. The rhymes are hilarious and clever, and the production is wonderful. And, like, raw. You can, like, hear the origins of Q-Tip and Ali Shaheed Muhammad, and I think even Jay Dilla is involved in that. Then Low End Theory is just absurd. It's just insane how good it is. And then Midnight Marauders is a genius album. Beats, Rhymes, and Life is a genius album. This latest one, I think, is essentially a genius album. And The Love Movement is pretty good. That's how I would rank Tribe albums.
All right.
I'm really high on A Tribe Called Quest, and I don't mean that in terms of the drugs. I mean philosophically in life all the time. A Tribe Called Quest, I believe, is... I mean, tell me a better hip-hop group, truly.
If you're going to say group only?
Yeah, group. Yeah, specifically group.
Yeah, I don't know that I can... I mean, I guess N.W.A. comes to mind.
One album.
You know?
One album.
But right, it's one album. So, yeah, I don't know that I could.
I mean, De La, if you want, you could go back.
No.
No.
I mean, I like De La.
No. Beastie Boys, Far Side.
Beastie Boys is the only one I would say.
Yeah, I'll take Tribe. I mean, I love the Beastie Boys.
Is Public Enemy a group? I guess you could say Public Enemy.
Yeah, I guess. But I wouldn't, as a group, I would not take them over Tribe.
Yeah, right up there with anybody.
They're certainly in a conversation with anybody, right? I mean...
Yeah.
So, R.I.P. Fife Dog, great album. Oh, and yes, let's just announce, because this is a thing we're going to do now. Do we want to do Low End Theory for next week?
Sure, we can start with Low End Theory.
Okay.
It seems like it would be kismet.
Yeah. So the plan is Toy Department takes on the classics.
Yeah.
and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we'll try to alternate each episode doing an album and then a movie. And then sort of just talk about some of our favorite things, because that would be fun.
Yeah.
And we can always, like, we could do a season of it for a few weeks and then put it out. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you know, the holidays are coming up. You're going to have some extra time.
Yeah.
You know, things are a little light in contemporary culture, so it seems like a good time to look back at some of our favorites.
True.
If you're into that sort of thing.
So heading to next week, man, I really recommend to everyone, and if you've never listened to it, well, boy, are you in for a treat. Just, like, sit down and spend that hour with the Low-End Theory.
It's such an easy listen, too. It's such an easy listen.
It's fantastic, and we won't talk any more about it now. We'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, because I want to talk about San Junipero now, where we're talking about favorites and classics of things.
Yes.
Because this, I think, look, I don't know if it's going to be everyone's number one, but this is certainly a consensus all-timer episode of Black Mirror, no?
I loved it.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a bit of a change of pace in that it's such a happy ending, and we're going to spoil it, so you were warned. But I think it exists. Does it? Okay. So on the other hand, I feel like more episodes this year, and we still have a couple to go, I guess, right? We have two to go or one?
We have two or three. After this, yeah.
Two more, because this is number four. I thought the ending of the Bryce Dallas Howard one was moderately uplifting in a way. Because the first six, and even the Christmas special, really kind of just drop you on your ass at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you and I disagreed on the first episode in terms of its upliftingness. But, yes, I could certainly see...
It's less of a hard landing, certainly, than like, the pig episode. You know?
Right.
Where it's just like a thud. It just ends with a thud. And it's like, so he's just going to, okay. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could say 15 Million Merits has a mildly, happy ending is the right word.
If you don't think about the fact that that poor woman is being raped in perpetuity, then I guess it might be a decently happy ending.
Yeah. But again, but they give her the drugs. Yeah, she doesn't bother her so much.
Oh gosh.
And she gets to live in a nice house.
But like even White Bear, which goes back and kind of explains what's happening at the end, it's still haunting and like it ends with like it drops you and it's not. There's no cushioning at all on the landing, and I think. You know, more episodes... My only point is more episodes this season have cushioned you a little bit from the fall. The exception, in my mind, being Playtest. Because, you know, the Shut Up and Dance kind of lets you off the hook morally and emotionally. Because these are bad people.
Right.
So, this one is not...
Again, that was another one where I didn't really feel quite the same way you did about that.
Well, I know you didn't, but you at least see what I'm saying.
I do get what you're saying.
It's been less stark.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, this is the first one that's like happy, isn't it?
Yeah. It was designed that way. It's the first episode that was written for this batch.
Really?
Interesting. And yeah, and I think Charlie Brooker was like,
let's do something different.
Was like, yeah, everyone just talks about the show in terms of how dark it is.
Right.
Let's see if we can try something with a little bit of a different tone.
But it was touch and go till the last moment, didn't you think? Were you sure she was? Like, I wasn't. I assumed because it was Black Mirror that she was gonna die. Okay. I mean, I guess we don't have to explain it because we said spoiler alert, so hopefully you've seen it if you're listening, but just in case, the one old lady ultimately does join the other old lady in, like, eternity to be delightful old lady, except young lady lovers.
Right.
But until the moment she pops up, like, during the end credits, I wasn't sure she was going to go. She's threatening to just die into nothingness, and I thought that was what was going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they certainly, they, I think the show does a really good job of giving you the reasons why she might want to do that. Whereas, yeah. if she did do that, I don't know that that would have necessarily been an unhappy ending. You know what I mean? But, yeah, it does have this ability to surprise you because you are so used to some of the beats of a Black Mirror episode where, you know, things are going to get bad and then things are going to get worse. And then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
And this didn't have that, but still, I think, had the episode sort of central, you know, central issues with technology, central distance from technology, central wariness of technology, you know. It was still very much a Black Mirror episode to me. But, you know, a change in mood I don't think hurt the show at all.
No.
In fact, it really made it kind of delightful. Well, and let me just say, too, because I've been watching it with the sound off while we've been doing this whole thing.
Rewatching San Junipero.
It's visually just so gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like, California looks amazing.
Yeah.
In it. You know, the 80s look amazing.
Everything looks amazing. You know, but because
I want to go out and get a Miata.
Yeah, know? Well, it's like this. It's these people's best memories of stuff, right? It's that seems to be the conceit is like it's recreated a world out of your best memories of various times in your history.
Yeah. And the music is incredible.
Great music. They got all the music. Like, they're exactly the songs you'd expect to be playing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like they are churning through, so like in these club scenes, they are just churning through fantastic 80s songs.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah.
This I don't know if it was my favorite episode. And again, I agree with you that it felt like a Black Mirror episode, you know? It was about technology in that way that a Black Mirror episode is. At the same time, I think it was an episode apart in a way because of just how bright it was. I mean, other Black Mirror, even what you just said about visually how appealing it's been during recording this podcast, is like you wouldn't do that with other Black Mirror episodes because they're visually stunning in certain ways, certainly, but not in like a soothing, enjoyable way at all.
Yeah,
like,
although I will
looks
say,
different.
There are several of them I've seen many, many times, so I'm not above rewatching.
Well, but you wouldn't do it with the sound off while you're recording a podcast, is what I'm saying.
That is correct.
Because visually, even if they are impressive or, again, even stunning, and in a good way, they're not soothing and enjoyable to look at in the same way. They're stark and difficult. And they're even, I think, shot in that way. Like, I think about, even in the very first episode with the Prime Minister, all the rooms the Prime Minister is in throughout that entire episode are, like, dimly lit by sort of uncomfortable fluorescent lights. And, like, they're just, like, shaded. It's shaded over. You know, what the brightest one was probably the Waldo moment, which was an absurdist and insane cartoon, which was not very uplifting either. So, like, it really is distinct among all Black Mirror episodes in its brightness throughout and the happiness of its ending.
Yeah. And it does sort of suggest a potential to take the show in a whole bunch of different directions. And I hope that, as much as I love it, I hope they play more with tone, you know, in the second batch of season 3 episodes that will... that I would really like them to put out tomorrow, but, you know, that we will get at some point. So
it really is incredible. I mean, here's what I wonder, is how much does the creation of this series rely on Charlie Brooker, right? Because if the answer is, you know, as we move forward only a little bit, this to me feels like the sort of show that even in today's crazy world of visual entertainment could last for 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, there will never stop being interesting new potential near future technologies that we can somehow screw up. Or in this case, get right.
Right. Yeah.
And it was really wonderful. And, you know, I watched this not long after the election, and I have to say it was really wonderful to have it turn out that way, man.
Yeah.
It felt great. It was really great.
Yeah. And look, you can see potential problems with the technology in this if you want to. And they get into that a little bit with the orgies and stuff like that. But, you know, if your potential problem is an orgy, is it really a problem?
Yeah, I mean, these are the tough questions, I guess. But it doesn't sound too rough to me. Well,
nope.
I meant that figuratively.
Yeah, indeed. but, yeah, it is a delightful episode. If you were looking to turn someone on to Black Mirror, who I think is a little bit, you worry about their ability to handle just the dark, the bleakness of it.
Well, but this is sort of what I'm saying, is wouldn't that be a very misleading thing for you to do? To be like, check out this wonderful show I love called Black Mirror. Here, this first episode is called San Junipero. Now, like, whatever happens after that is going to be wrong and bad.
Yeah, that's why I fully endorse it.
goodness.
We should get going. Should we do some homework?
Well, I think low-end theory is some of the homework, right?
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I have another thing that I would like to assign to people.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to give out.
Hold on. Hold quickly for one last bong rip, because I also have a question for you after your assignment. So.
Okay.
All right, let's hear the assignment.
I'm going to much like San Junipero, take a turn, change the tone, and shatter your expectations.
Oh my!
By assigning you some PBS to watch this week.
Oh goodness gracious!
I have to. A friend actually texted me while it was airing and said you should check this out. Stumbled into a show called Soundbreaking, which I guess is a series that they are running on PBS, about innovators in music. And this was an hour-long Soundbreaking.
Soundbreaking. Gonna Google it. Go on.
This was an hour-long documentary on the history of sampling.
Sampling?
And hip-hop.
Interesting.
Sampling and hip-hop, yeah, mostly. And it was delightful. And they got a lot of principles and told a lot of great stories about, you know, the Public Enemy Bomb Squad records and, you know, even going back to, like, you know, Fab Five Freddy and African Bambaataa and then on all the way up through Kanye West. There's extensive conversations with Rick Rubin and the Dust Brothers and, you know, going into, you know, the Beastie Boys making Paula's Boutique, which is, you know, sort of a holy grail of samples and stuff.
Oh, one of the best.
Yeah, it's a, and, you know, people are fierce and passionate and opinionated in their discussion of these things. Oh, the stories about making, about Run DMC and Walk This Way and how adding rock samples changed things, also really interesting. I know for you being an old school hip hop guy, you'll really enjoy that hour, and I found it super watchable. So yeah, check that out.
Okay, remind me, because I will certainly not remember at this stage, that in the future we should, one of the movies we should do is a documentary called Scratch. Have you ever seen that?
I've heard of it, but I have not seen it yet.
Okay, so. Yes, Soundbreaking on PBS. I'm going to investigate this. Yes, sir.
Check that out.
That's just one episode of this series, is what you're saying.
Yeah, so I, you know, watch that episode, I would say, but it's, if, you know, if that's any indication, and I'd literally never heard of this series until like Tuesday, it seemed like other episodes would also be pretty good. So I set a season pass for it, and I'll let you know.
Okay. Okay. Four? Is it called Four on the Floor?
No, that's something else. Episode? No.
The World is Yours. The World is Yours.
Yes. I believe it is The World Is Yours.
Whose world is this? Okay. All right. It appears that you can watch the full episodes of your PBS show online for those interested.
Awesome.
Yeah. At pbs.org. Anyway, free plug, PBS. You're welcome. That's a donation. Consider that a donation.
Where's my tote bag?
So, the question is, I think, like, I can we debrief? Do we feel like the persistent marijuana smoking had a dramatic effect, a not-so-dramatic effect, no effect?
I would say, because I know, yeah, I noticed.
Yeah, no, I mean, you noticed. I think people would notice. I just wondered if it had... I think clearly, if we're going to break it down a little bit, if we're going to study the game tape just a little, I think the Warrior... My Warrior diatribe probably was like 2 minutes longer than it would have been.
Yeah. I think we could say based on that comment that maybe also your perception of space and time might be a little off.
Could be. But also, I think when we go back and check, we will find that we talked about the Warriors for damn near 20 minutes.
Yes, that's correct.
So that's a lot. And I feel like there was a stretch at the beginning where I did a solid like six in a row.
Yeah, I would say that's... Yeah, and that was the bong was a part of that, I think.
Yeah.
We can safely say.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm impressed because I could not take bong rips and do this podcast, so.
Well, yeah, I don't know if impressed is the right word, but, you know, I'm a grown-up with practice.
Yeah. Although maybe one day I will, and we'll just see if anybody notices.
Yeah, what's your level of legality right now in Minnesota? It's not recreational there yet, is it?
No, Minnesota has... very limited medical.
Yeah, that's what Illinois has as well.
Like you really have to be really sick. Dying.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's where they're at. Also, Minnesota doesn't sell beer on Sunday, so
yeah, I know about that.
Anytime soon,
you know, I have a friend in Minnesota who I could introduce you to. Although, he's pretty weird. I don't know how great you guys would get along, but he is or has been for a while. He's a documentary filmmaker. He's been working on a film about the attempts to overturn the no liquor on Sunday laws in the state.
Oh, actually, you know what? Actually, you should set me up with him.
Yeah.
Because I would be interested in talking to him about that specific subject because I feel like that's something that...
You want to, like, get involved in the fight for legalizing booze on Sundays?
Well, I feel like that's something that my radio station... which is a loose collection of beer drinkers.
Yeah.
With our own, our radio station has its own beer.
Oh, wow.
93X Brotherhood Brew.
What?
If you are in the Twin Cities area, it's actually called Brotherhood Beer, 93X Brotherhood Beer. If you are in the Twin Cities area, I recommend highly. We're in 700 stores, in fact.
Wait a second.
So.
Why have I not received a care package of this beer?
The answer to that is because it's difficult to send beer in the mail.
Yeah, suppose that's true, but I just assume you have just like stacks of cases of this beer in your garage or something.
We have some cases in the radio station, and I will try to bring you some at some point. It's actually quite good.
Yeah, what's it? What type of beer are we talking here?
It is an American lager.
Okay.
Designed to be sessionable.
Uh-huh.
It is. It's tasty. It's a craft beer, but it's not super hoppy.
Good. I don't
like
too hoppy.
Very accessible and drinkable. Yeah. No, I think you'd like it a lot. It's made by a company called Lithbridge. That's a local brewer here.
All right.
That has a few beers in stores. And like I said, we're at 700 stores, and it's good.
You know what? I'm gonna link you up with my buddy Nate.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. I think we'd like to get involved.
What a fun detour. See, I think that also was probably bong related.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's figure out how to get you some beer, and then maybe you can do a podcast drunk on 93X Brotherhood Beer, and we'll see how that sounds too.
Oh wow, that would take more effort. I'm not. Yeah, I think it would go pretty quickly from like unnoticeable to unpleasant.
Would you love everything?
Or
let
just
me
like,
tell you.
just be like zoned out and no use whatsoever.
All right.
I don't know. Well, I will say I was this past weekend on Saturday, I was as drunk as I've been since college, and at the end of the night, before getting into a Lyft with a totally deaf driver, I had a phone conversation that apparently was reasonably coherent. So maybe I'm selling myself short.
Yeah, maybe. I'd say we put it to the test.
There's literally only one way to find out.
All right. Well, I'd say the first, it's probably not the first, let's be honest, but this particular Stoned podcast was a success for you. So.
Well, it's certainly the first where I aggressively smoked throughout the podcast.
Yeah, indeed.
I mean, it's possible that any time we've recorded after work in the past, it's possible that I was at least a little bit high. But this stands out.
Was that like me saying it's possible that the Warriors are going to have to go through the Lakers or the Clippers, Spurs, and Cavs in some order?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about that level of possible, I think. all right, sir. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your holiday schedule, I'll be delighted that the world will hear this on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, well, look, I'm not going to mince words or waste time. I'm going to probably take two or three more bong rips and publish this thing ASAP. So this will go out in the middle of the night, early Thanksgiving morning. And then, you know, we can tweet some more about it tomorrow, but this will be available to the people when they wake up on Thanksgiving morning, you know? That's how we roll.
Which for many people in my time zone is going to be in like 3 hours.
True. So. Also, it is already, it's Thanksgiving for the both of us, so happy Thanksgiving to you. Happy greatest of holidays to you, my friend.
Indeed. Happy greatest of holidays to you and to all of you Toy Department listeners out there. Thank you for listening. And anything else you want to add?
Bye.
I was like, you better say bye, damn it.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.